This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
We're continuing to learn more and more about what the Reiners did with Nick while they were alive. The steps they took to try and contain the madness. And we're going to go through what we've learned about the conservatorship. And it's going to be an interesting lesson in just what these do and what they don't do. And what you have to do to keep them active. And is it worth it? In practice, do they do anything near on paper it looks like? Because the Reiners did something most families of severely mentally ill adults cannot do. They got a court to take away their son's autonomy for a period of time. A judge signed off. A licensed fiduciary was appointed for 1 year. That's important. 1 year. For 1 year, Nick Reiner was under an LPS conservatorship, the most restrictive mental health intervention California law allows. The state of California looked at Nick Reiner and said, this man cannot care for himself. This man needs someone else to make decisions for him. This man can be forced to take medication against his will and placed in a locked psychiatric facility if a doctor says it's necessary. And 4 years later, Rob and Michelle Reiner are dead. So, what happened? We're going to get into all of that. Be part of our conversation on this story and tell me your thoughts as we work through this, because I want to hear them, either on YouTube comments or on our Substack comments. You can join us on Substack right now, absolutely free, no paywall there, and get our reporting a day before everybody else and communicate directly with us here in the studio. So I highly suggest joining us over on Substack in our community that we're building there. Lots of exclusive, lots of get information before everybody else type stuff on our Substack. You'll get a reporting in advance. So I highly suggest joining us there. So today I want to talk about what that conservatorship actually meant, what it allowed, what it didn't, and why it wasn't renewed, because that question is going to be at the center of this case going forward. And the answer isn't simple. The answer, quite frankly, might make you angry. Because the conservatorship didn't fail because the family failed. It may have failed because the law worked exactly as designed. Let's start with what an LPS conservatorship actually is, okay? Because most people hear conservatorship and what is coming to your mind? I'm going to do David Copperfield now. Stick your finger on the screen. Hold it right there. And when I touch the screen with you, I'm going to tell you the name you're thinking of. It's Britney Spears. Wow, wasn't that amazing? Well, that's not what this is. Does anybody remember the David Copperfield specials from the 90s where he would do shit like that, where it's like, and touch the screen and I'm going to tell you what card you're looking at? That's, yeah, anyway. If not, it's probably on YouTube somewhere. Anyway, we were amazed by this in 1993, touching the staticky television. Wow. Anyway. That's not what this was. Britney was under a probate conservatorship. That's about controlling someone's finances, their autonomy, their ability to sign contracts. LPS is different. LPS is the nuclear option. It's named after the Lanternman Petraeus Short Act of 1967, and it exists for one specific population, adults so severely mentally ill that they cannot provide for their own basic survival. Under an LPS conservatorship, the conservator can consent to psychiatric treatment even if the patient refuses. They can legally agree to psychotropic medications over the patient's objection. And this is critical. They can place the person in a locked psychiatric facility if a psychiatrist says it's needed. Whether or not the patient agrees, this isn't about making someone's or managing someone's checking account. This is about the state saying your mental illness is so severe that you have temporarily lost the right to make decisions about your own mind. To get there, the judge has to find beyond a reasonable doubt the highest legal standard we have that the person is gravely disabled. And under California law, that means they cannot provide for their own basic needs for food, clothing, or shelter as a result of a medical or a mental disorder, rather. Attorney Lee Blumen told the New York Times, quote, "You have to be pretty severe to be placed on a mental health conservatorship in California. Of all the people who come into the system, a very small group of people actually get placed on the conservatorship." We were looking at the number in an episode yesterday of California's population of millions and millions and millions of people. There was like 1,500 that actually have a conservatorship, a minute number compared to the amount of the population. And when you really think of the amount of people who probably actually need it, it's, yeah. So Nick Reiner was in that very small group for a very small period of time. Here's how that timeline works, and here's what we know now. In 2019, LAPD responded to the Reiner home at least twice, and according to police records obtained by Rolling Stone, once in February for a welfare check, once in September for what the logs describe as a mental call involving a male. Sometime around 2020, Nick was reportedly diagnosed with schizophrenia or schizoaffective disorder, conditions that can involve delusions, paranoia, hallucinations, and severe mood disturbances. And in 2020, following what sources say was an involuntary psychiatric hospitalization, Nick was in place under an LPS conservatorship. Stephen Baer, a licensed fiduciary in Los Angeles, was appointed as his conservator, not the family, a professional. The conservatorship lasted 1 year, as they all do, under California law. It wasn't like, well, we'll just take the entry-level plan and see if we'd like to renew for a three-year deal next time, Alex. No, it was, this is every year you have to renew this shit. In 2021, it ended and it was not renewed. And here's where this story takes a turn that should be trouble. And really, it should disturb anyone who thinks about mental health law in this country. Under the California system, families cannot initiate an LPS conservatorship. Only treating physicians at designated psychiatric facilities can start that process. And critically, a person cannot be found gravely disabled if someone else, a family member or a friend or anyone, is providing for their basic needs. The Santa Clara Superior Court's own guidance says very plainly, if you or another adult can provide for the person's basic needs, the court cannot find the person to be gravely disabled, even if they themselves are. So even if you are gravely disabled, if someone gives a shit about you, you're not anymore. It seems kind of like a cop out, doesn't it? It's like, yeah, you, like on your own, we're going to, oh, you're good. You got this person. You're going to take all of it from us and we don't have to do anything for you. Otherwise, if they were just by themselves, we really have to step out. Oh, you're going to do it all. Okay, you do it all. California thanks you. So if you're feeding someone, housing someone, clothing someone, if you're doing what any loving parent would do for a struggling human being, adult child, you may be legally disqualifying them from the very intervention that could save their life. California appellate courts have reinforced this principle. If a person can reliably access necessities through family or friends, that may not meet the threshold for grave disability. Yeah. So they literally have to be rotting on the streets. Yes, they do. If you're bringing them, if you're deciding, you know what, here's your McDouble and fries and orange drink, you may be taking them out of the gravely disabled category in California. California, like I said, appellate courts have reinforced this principle time and time again. The system was designed this way intentionally. The LPS Act was written to prevent the indefinite warehousing of mentally ill people in institutions. It prioritizes liberty. It prioritizes autonomy. It assumes that family support is a good thing, a protective factor, a reason not to intervene. It also is completely delusional as fuck.
because it doesn't understand mental illness at all. It's a law about mental illness that doesn't understand the first goddamn thing about mental illness. Seems very American. But here's the cruel paradox for families like the Reiners. The more you help, the harder it becomes to get the state to help. The more you provide, the less gravely disabled your loved one appears on paper. Your wealth becomes an obstacle. Your wealth becomes basically a feeding ground is what it does. Oh, you got money? You can pay for it, but the state doesn't have to? We'll just eat up that. I mean, look, it's how the old folks live. It is. You want to talk about an industry that's there to just siphon money out of human beings. Oh, you got old and you saved up all your money? Let us take all of it from you with ridiculously priced everything. You'd like to live not in squalor? You'd like to live in this lovely community here? Well, we're going to charge 10 times what it really should cost for your care. And it doesn't even have to be a lovely, oh, you want to live in this kind of shitty community with these two people over here that, you know, we don't know. We found them. They applied for the job. They don't have college educations, but they can probably be caregivers. Yes, that's $10,000 a month. Oh, you want really good care? That'll be $100,000 over there. They have free vanilla yogurt on Wednesdays. Anyway, I went off on a tangent there. On the healthcare systems need to make money and predatory behavior on anyone who has it. Determined to make you not have it. And even then, what happens? Oh, the government can cover the check. We're just going to siphon, because there's no end. There's no end to the honeypot of money that the healthcare industry can get. Once they've taken all of yours, then the government will step in. But they have to take all of yours first. Because it's like a Nintendo game. You lose your points, you press continue. You know? And by that age, you're like, fuck it. I'm happy I'm alive today. Anyway. Your devotion in a situation like this becomes a legal liability. Rob and Michelle Reiner were housing their son in their Brentwood mansion. They were feeding him. They were, by all accounts, doing everything they could to keep him stable and safe. And that very act of care may have created a legal obstacle to renewing the conservatorship that gave them the power to force treatment. We don't know for certain why the conservatorship wasn't renewed in 2021, but the structure of the law itself raises uncomfortable possibilities. The public guardian's office cited patient confidentiality. The New York Times, Rolling Stone, and Deadline have all reported that the reason remains unclear. But, I mean, consider the possibilities here. Number one, the family is not the one that can initiate it. That has to be the conservator. The professional has to say he needs it. Maybe Nick improved enough that he no longer met the threshold. Maybe he did. If the medication was working, and sources say it was, before the recent switch, he was living with family who provided for his needs, a judge might reasonably find he no longer qualified as gravely disabled. The conservator may have said the same thing. Because under California law, he was good. Maybe there was no mechanism to renew. Families can't perform or can't petition for LPS conservatorships, only treating physicians. At designated facilities can. And if Nick wasn't hospitalized in 2021, if he was stable enough to be living at home, there may not have been anyone in that sort of position to initiate the renewal. Maybe the conservator chose not to petition. Stephen Baer was responsible for tracking expiration dates and filing for renewal. We don't know what factors went into his decision. He told the Times only that mental illness is an epidemic that is widely misunderstood and that this is a horrible tragedy. Or maybe Nick fought it. Under California, conservatees can request jury trials, file writs of habeas corpus, demand rehearings every 6 months. The system is designed to restore liberty at the earliest possible moment. That is the whole point. And if you have one, a mentally ill person that's able to get around the system who really needs help, these people are master manipulators, the real functional ones. Who the hell is going to sit there and fight every 6 months when you're just being fought by the very person you're trying to save?
that doesn't want to be saved. And so 4 years passed. The conservatorship expired. Nick's civil rights were restored. He could refuse treatment. He could make his own medical decisions. He could say no. Fast forward to late 2024. Nick is living with his parents again. He's on medication for his psychiatric conditions. And by all accounts, the medication is working. But there are side effects, reportedly including weight gain. And so according to multiple sources, Nick reportedly asked his doctors to change his medication. They did, approximately 1 month before December 14th. Sources told TMZ the new medication made him agitated, erratic, increasingly dangerous. One source described it as a complete break from reality. Here's a question nobody wants to answer. Who is monitoring this? Under what authority? Without the conservatorship in place, Nick was a free adult making his own medical decisions. His parents could suggest, they could plead, they could beg, but they couldn't force him to do anything. This is where the defense is headed. Alan Jackson, before he withdrew from the case, told reporters that Nick Reiner is not guilty of murder under California law. He said a jury would learn the true facts of circumstances surrounding Nick's case. Yes. That language is deliberate. It's pointing directly at the mental health defense, not guilty by reason of insanity, or perhaps a diminished capacity argument. And the conservatorship history will be central to that defense, because it's not just the family saying Nick was severely mentally ill. It's the state of California. A judge found, beyond a reasonable doubt, that Nick Reiner could not care for himself due to mental illness a couple years ago. It's not speculation. That's not a family in denial. That's a legal finding fact. But Stephen Bear will almost certainly be on a witness list now. And they'll say, you know, hey, yes, he was there once, but under California law also, we have to check this every year. We found he wasn't anymore, so what's the deal? Whatever he observed during that year of conservatorship, whatever he knows about Nick's condition and treatment and prognosis, that's all going to come out. But the prosecution has an answer to this, too. The conservatorship ended 4 years before the murders. 4 years! If Nick was stable enough to not need conservatorship, stable enough to live independently, stable enough to make his own medical decisions, was he stable enough to form intent? Was he stable enough to know what he was doing when he allegedly stabbed his parents to death? The medical change happened a month before the killings. That's recent. That's acute. But the gap between 2021 and 2025 is 4 years of apparent stability. 4 years when the system decided Nick Reiner didn't need involuntary intervention. The prosecution will argue that means something. Here's a bigger question, and it's one that goes way beyond this case. What do you do when the system that's supposed to protect the most vulnerable is built on a foundation that assumes the worst case won't happen? When the laws designed to prevent abuse of the mentally ill might enable the very tragedies they're supposed to prevent? California has actually tried to address some of this. Senate Bill 43, which went into effect in 2024, with some countries implementing implementing this year, expands the definition of grave disability to include inability to provide for necessary medical care and personal safety, not just food, clothing, and shelter. It also covers severe substance and disorders like that, which weren't possible before. Maybe that would have helped the Reiners. Maybe it would have given them more options, more leverage, more legal ground to stand on. But it did not exist 5 years ago when they needed it. The Reiners were not negligent. They weren't absent. They weren't in denial. They got their son into the most restrictive mental health intervention that California offers. They had wealth that could have bought any treatment, any facility, any expert in the country, and it still wasn't enough. Because you can't buy your way out of a law that says loving your child too much disqualifies them from help. Rob Reiner talked publicly about regretting the tough love approach that various addiction specialists had recommended over the years. In a 2015 interview, he said that when Nick told him the treatment wasn't working, they didn't listen. They listened to the people with diplomas on their walls instead of their own son. And he says he carried that regret for years. Yeah. Unfortunately, he carried it to the grave. And it turned out he shouldn't have had regret at all. He should have listened more. Here's the thing about California's mental health laws. There is no approach that guarantees safety. Tough love might push someone away. Unconditional support might legally disqualify them from involuntary treatment. There is no path through this that doesn't involve risk, that doesn't involve loss, that doesn't involve the very real possibility that your very best efforts won't be enough. The conservatorship didn't fail because the Reiners failed. It ended because the law worked exactly as designed, prioritizing liberty over intervention and autonomy over safety, civil rights over worst-case outcomes. And maybe that's the right framework for society at large, but we shouldn't lock people away forever because they might be dangerous. That might be, you know, the thought process here. But you know what? It's not the right one. The history of psychiatry is full of horror stories about what happens when we give institutions too much power over the mentally ill. But tell that to Romy and Jake Reiner. Tell that to the millions of families who could truly benefit, whose family member is mentally ill, who could truly benefit from a system that worked, not one that just doesn't exist because we're too afraid to make it work because of what the past looked like. They walked into their parents' home on December 14th and found Rob and Michelle dead from multiple sharp force injuries. They discovered their brother had been arrested hours later near downtown Los Angeles. And now they're watching the legal system try to make sense of something that doesn't make sense, a tragedy that was both unforeseeable and, in hindsight, almost inevitable. Nick Reiner is currently being held in high observation mental health units at Twin Towers Correctional Facility in downtown LA. And according to People magazine, he's alone in the cell at times. Sources say he doesn't understand why he's in jail. Some sources say he believes there's a conspiracy against him. I can see how it might feel that way. He was on suicide watch when he first arrived. Now he's been taken off. His next arraignment, February 23rd. He's expected to enter a plea then. Though delays are possible, this case has already seen two. The public defender's office has taken over his representation. The DA's office has said they're fully confident a jury will convict him beyond a reasonable doubt. The family has told prosecutors, allegedly, that they don't want the death penalty. Somewhere in the middle of all this is a question that has no good answer. What should we do with people who are too sick to care for themselves, too loved to be abandoned, too dangerous to ignore? The Reiners tried everything. They got the conservatorship. They got the medication. They got the professional conversation. They got the diagnoses and the treatment plans. And it still ended with two people dead in their own bedroom on the first night of Hanukkah. I don't know what the jury will decide about Nick Reiner's culpability. I don't know whether he understood what he was doing that night, whether he knew right from wrong, whether he could form the intent that first-degree murder requires. That's for the legal system to work out. But I know this. The system that was supposed to protect everyone in that house, Nick included, was built on assumptions that didn't survive contact with reality. And until we're willing to have an honest conversation about what we owe to the severely mentally ill and what we owe to the people who love them, we're going to keep seeing tragedies like this one. The conservatorship worked exactly as designed, and that might be the most damning thing you can say about it. Give me your thoughts in the comment section on YouTube and on Substack, two places where you can weigh in. We'd love to get your thoughts and continue this conversation off the air. Right now on our Substack, you can access all of our reporting before everybody else. You get it a day in advance. It's free. There's no paywall to join. So you can sign up there, you get access to all that, and you can then communicate directly with us here in the studio. I'd love to get your thoughts on these cases. Your thoughts and opinions certainly do weigh in as we put our stories together. So I'd love that conversation to continue off the air, either on YouTube or, like I said, on our Substack. Please press subscribe wherever it is you're listening so you don't miss any of our reporting. And if you're on Apple Podcasts, please leave us a review. That signals to others that you're finding are reporting valuable and lets them know about it as well. So please do leave us a review there on Apple Podcasts, whatever channel you're watching or listening to us on. Thank you so much. All right, we'll continue our conversation off the air. Until then, I'm Tony Bruschi. We will talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.